This is James Throckmorton, and today I want to talk about Sabbath observation, how we keep the Sabbath. In Leviticus 23, it lists the feast of God, and it lists the seventh-day Sabbath as the first feast, the first holy day. It's a reoccurring holy day. It occurs every seventh day. It's a memorial to creation. We can go back to Genesis and see where God tells us that he created the heavens and the earth and he rested on the seventh day, and makes it very clear the origin of the seventh day Sabbath. I want to turn over in Exodus, the 31st chapter, and look at an agreement that God made with the children of Israel in regards to the Sabbath, the seventh-day Sabbath. You know, I've had people question me as to why I keep the Sabbath, and I've got a real simple and a little bit of a sarcastic answer that I say, well, before I was in the first grade, I could count to seven. It's a very simple thing. It doesn't take a great intellect to be able to count to seven. It simply takes someone that believes in God and believes in his word and believes in being obedient to God. So God made an agreement with the children of Israel as he was bringing them out of Egypt, and he reestablished, because all the time they were in captivity they had lost the Sabbath, he reestablished the Sabbath and to the children of Israel, and he made an agreement, a perpetual agreement to them. And, you know, there's a lot of people that would try to dismiss that and say, well, that was ancient, old-time agreement. And that's true. That did happen anciently. But if we understand the story flow of the Bible and understand the Bible, we can understand that physical Israel was a type of spiritual Israel, a type of the Church of God, the individuals that were called after the day of Pentecost to be qualifying, being tested, judged by God, because the Bible does say judgment is now on the house of God, that they are qualifying to be in the first resurrection and to be an integral part of helping God in the millennium. Some people say, well, God doesn't need any help. Well, that's human beings speaking, because if God didn't want any additional help, there would be no reason for human beings to even exist. You know, that's a different subject for a different day, but, you know, why do human beings exist in the first place? The Bible tells us is working out a plan, because God is reproducing his kind for a purpose. Let's look in Exodus, the 31st chapter, and we'll go down in verse 15. It says, 6 days may work be done, but on the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the eternal. Whoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. It was a capital crime. And in a sense it is, because anybody that forever refuses to be obedient to God is committing a capital crime, and the ultimate penalty will be eternal death. So it's very applicable. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. You know, perpetual, something that never ends, never ends. And then verse 17, a very important thing, something that we can remember down through history and we can remember it today. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. You know, a little aside that I want to mention, that Church of God ministers use the term eternal in the place of Lord. And there's a reason for that. It comes from the Moffat translation, and then when God revealed himself to Moses and Moses asked God's name, well, God said, I am that I am. And so, in effect, that statement of God always being in the present tense, and that's the way he stated it to Moses, means that God has always existed. He's eternal. And the Moffat translation uses that term, and it's a good term. It's the best term we have for addressing God is eternal. Not that the other terms or the other words are necessarily wrong. Being obedient to God and the truth of God is not a matter of speech. It's not being able to say a certain word in a certain language. If it was, a little different thing would have happened on the day of Pentecost, because if you remember the event that happened, God didn't teach everybody a new language. When the apostles stood up and spoke, every individual, no matter what his native tongue was, heard in his own language. And it wasn't a miracle of speaking, it was a miracle of hearing. And that's just a little aside. Now, I want to talk a little about how we observe the Sabbath, and I want to refer to some facts. In my tenure, which is nearly 50 years in the Church of God, and being a Sabbath keeper, I've seen a lot of people give up on the Sabbath and stop keeping the Sabbath. A lot of people that knew about it, a lot of people that made great sacrifices sometimes to be able to keep the Sabbath. I've seen those people give up, and those people that are listening to this that have long tenure in the church know exactly what I'm talking about. Yet there's a group of people on this earth today that have been able to keep the Sabbath for 2,000 years. Let's just count back to the time that Jesus Christ walked the earth. And that's the Jewish people. The Jewish people that have held on to some of their traditions. And I don't necessarily agree with all their traditions. You know, that's not what the New Testament church is about. But I do have to agree that if they have kept the Sabbath for 2,000 years, that covenant that God made with them, that he says is perpetual, is still in effect. And that's evident. They have the works to prove that. Now, my subject is certainly not Judaism today. I just want to say the Jews have retained the seventh-day Sabbath for 2,000 years and haven't lost it. And I think their traditions have helped them do that. Does that mean I need to do all their traditions? No. The New Testament teaches us plainly something different, but I do understand the identity of modern-day Israel, not just the tribe of Judah or the little remnant that's still in Israel, but of all 12 tribes. And I do understand, and I've got sermons online that explain that about the kingdom of God, that actually when Christ returns, one of the first things that happens is going to be the reestablishment of the nation of Israel. But what I want to talk about today is how we observe the Sabbath and the way we observe the Sabbath. Now, I'm not going to have a lot of do's and don'ts. A lot of people want that. People like it when things are regimented. As human beings, we're all a lot like sheep, and certainly the Bible makes that definitely clear. But God calls people the first resurrection as individuals. Now, first of all, let's talk about when the Sabbath starts, when it begins, and when it ends. And we need to understand that in Christ's day, let's just go back to Christ's day. It goes back further than that, but let's take it at the time of his earthly ministry. The days were not started at midnight like we do today. The days started at sunset. The new day started when the old day ended. In fact, we use the term today, evening. I have our evening meal. Well, in our society, in the world we live in, the age we live in, evening to us sort of means the end of things, but that's not what the word came from. Its origin is from Eve, from the beginning. And so when we say we have our evening meal, we're actually having the beginning meal of the day. And that's just a little something to think about. Now, I want to mention something. I remember a few years ago, I saw an article that was published by Church of God Group. And the article was written by a man that lived in Canada. And I'll be honest, it wasn't that good an article. It was a little off track, but it did make the mention of the fact that you just couldn't use sundown as an absolute way to calculate the Sabbath at any point on the earth. And I know people that lived in the middle section of the United States that got very angry about this, wrote him some mean letters, which people are good at doing that when they are rather ignorant and don't want to learn the truth. I've lived at 58 degrees north for nearly 2 years when I was in the service. And you know, you barely see the sunset. If you used sunset as the absolute guide for the Sabbath, you'd have a Sabbath day that was very short part of the year. And another part of the year, you'd have a Sabbath day was very long. And so, you know, we live, I'm talking primarily people in the United States of America, although people listen online around the world. And so people in different places would have to use a different method. Although most of the converted people and most of the people that God has dealt with don't live at those extremes, but there's still a way to keep the Sabbath. And it would be very simple if you could. This time you have to be able to count to seven and then count a little further. You would take the seventh 24-hour cycle, and that would be the Sabbath. You know, I think everybody understands that principle. People that live in those northern or four southern extreme locations of the earth, they did that. You know, we had a specific time to go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and work to five, and that was you know, the schedule, and it was done by time, not by sunset. Now, for those of us in the United States and Israel for that matter, and most of the world, we can certainly use sunset. It is the easy way to calculate the Sabbath. It's the easy way. It's not the only way. So with that mentioned, I want to talk about a little about how we look at the Sabbath. And a lot of people look at the Sabbath as a burden, as something, and I can understand that, because people that are employed and by other people, and I've always been blessed to be self-employed and can just let people get mad at me when I close my business on the Sabbath or whatever I might need to do, and just deal with that. But people that have a job and their boss doesn't want them to not work on Saturday, or, you know, in the wintertime by 4:45 or 5, it's sundown, and the Sabbath has begun, and you know, people want to stop working at that time. And if somebody needs to ask their boss for that, they're not going to be real happy most of the time. There's a way we approach the Sabbath. Now, a couple of years ago, my wife and I and my daughter were very fortunate to be able to go to Israel, modern-day Israel, the remnant of the house of Judah in this time frame. And that nation is pretty unique, is that they start closing down their businesses and stuff on Friday afternoon. Yet it's a very open nation. They're not prejudiced against other people, but the nation as a whole does keep the Sabbath, and Friday is a preparation day. Now, I've mentioned this to some New Testament Christians, then they took it rather hard because they thought that I was just copying the Jews, or that for some reason they didn't want any more intrusions by God in their life. And yet there's something that the Bible teaches, and it's very subtle. And the Jews' policy of starting to shut things down about Friday noon, and they did business, and you could go to the grocery store and buy groceries and all those things, but they began to wind it down. You know, in modern-day Church of God, I've watched over the years, and I've experienced that myself, that sometimes we start the Sabbath like running into a brick wall. Work right up to the last minute, particularly the winter months, and fighting to get the Sabbath started, waiting until sundown, and maybe fudging a little here and there, because that's human nature. It's human nature to fudge on things, and so it's just the Sabbath starts like just running into a brick wall, and there you are. That's not the right way to do it. Now, if somebody has a job and they have to work to 4 o'clock, or they have to keep their business open till 4 o'clock or whatever in the winter months, then that's understandable. It's not the ideal situation, and you need to prepare that. In fact, I know people that keep the Sabbath, that operate business, and on Friday afternoon, they close early. They close at 4 to avoid that problem. In my own business, I try to be closed on Friday. You know, several businesses around town close on Monday or some other day of the week besides the weekend. We do it on Friday. And that works good. And there's been the occasion where we had to go ahead and do things because of the necessity of the moment. And we found ourselves again running head on into the brick wall of the Sabbath beginning. And so that automatically makes you uptight about the Sabbath. You need to sort of move into the Sabbath a lot more relaxed, if you would, than that. And there is biblical example. We know in the New Testament it talks about the preparation day. This was at the time of Christ's burial and resurrection. And in this case, it was the high day, a yearly Sabbath that was coming around. But actually the first day of unleavened bread. But the principle is there. And then we can turn back again into Exodus, this time into the 16th chapter. And there is a God-given example of Friday being a preparation day, a day that you begin to prepare yourself for the Sabbath. Now, you know, Western pagan-based Christianity that we're all familiar with in this age has not only counterfeited the Sabbath, and believe me, they don't keep Sunday like God says to keep the Sabbath. And we'll talk about that a little later, but they have counterfeited Saturday and Sunday instead of Friday and Saturday, because Friday is a biblically declared preparation day. It's a work day. It's a day you do business on. Now, let's talk just for a minute about what we do on the Sabbath. And a lot of people start keeping the Sabbath, and I was this way myself when I started keeping the Sabbath. I was by myself, just me, and I hadn't really come into contact with the Church of God at that time. And so I sort of had the idea that you keep the Sabbath like you keep, like people keep Sunday. I found out real quick that that wasn't right. That wasn't the way you keep the Sabbath. And people that come in the Church of God, they still have a tendency to want to do all the fun things on Friday night. They want to go to the ball games, the car races, the whatever might be going on, because that's more important than the Sabbath. Well, the biblical commands on the Sabbath tells us that we're not to buy and sell, not to do business, not to do servile work. It really, and when we get over and read in Exodus 16, we're going to see that God initially shows that you shouldn't do heavy bacon, that sort of thing. And also the subject comes up of eating and resting. You know, the last church organization I belonged to that I actually resigned from and left, that organization, I could nearly call it, let's all go out to have a feast in restaurants on the Sabbath. And I even heard one sermon from one of their ministers. Some people sent me a CD that proclaimed that he was the Lord of the Sabbath, that he could do what he wanted to do on the Sabbath, is at least the way I interpreted his sermon, and apparently other people did too. And I was, that really made me sad to hear that. Now, does that mean you can never eat out on the Sabbath? No, it doesn't mean that. There's reasons. For years, I traveled, sometimes driving 1,000 miles to 2,000 miles a month. And I had to travel from one church to the next church. I had to buy gasoline. I had to stay in motels. I had to buy food. And sometimes the church, on a holy day, everyone has to go out to a restaurant because we're away from our homes and there's no really place to eat. That's understandable. And that example, again, is in the New Testament. But as far as making plans to go out eat every Sabbath, or just when Friday night comes around, say, let's go eat tonight, and then next Friday, next Friday, next Friday, next Friday, there needs to be a specific reason for doing it that is really church and family related. Now, I mentioned church and family because the Sabbath really is a family day. It's a day that you stay home and rest. That doesn't mean you don't go to church, because God tells us not to forsake assembling ourselves together if it's possible to meet with people. It's better to stay by yourself than it is to meet with the wrong people, some people that are deceivers or people that are not willing to be as obedient to God as you might want to be. And, you know, there'd be people that say I'm being downright unchristian here, but you become influenced by the people you are with, your friends. You know, here, what parent hasn't told his children to be careful who you run around with? Well, that's very true in the Church of God. People that are trying to be obedient to God, you better be careful who you listen to and who you run around with. And the example we have on the Sabbath, the biblical example, and it's a good example, and it's really about the only one we need, is Christ's disciples were out on the Sabbath. They had some place they needed to go, and they were doing a little traveling on the Sabbath. Now, the New Testament talks about a Sabbath day's journey, but a Sabbath day's journey is not something that God commands. That was something that the Jews had added on, and I'm not saying it's not a good suggestion, because I don't think you need to just go out every Sabbath and plan to make a big trip, although I spent years of my life that I had to travel on the Sabbath as a minister from one congregation to the other. I've, make it two different congregations on the same Sabbath a lot of times. And so I had to travel, but Christ and his disciples were out going across the fields. It doesn't tell us why exactly, except they wanted to get from point A to point B. It tells us that. But they were hungry, and they gathered grain and ate it. I imagine Christ did too. He was a physical human being. It doesn't say yay or nay on it, but I imagine he gathered the grain too and ate it. And because they were hungry. They were physical human beings. They were hungry. And the scribes and Pharisees accused them of breaking the law. And it wasn't the law they was breaking. It was the added rules that the scribes and Pharisees had added, which Christ plainly said was a burden. I won't get off on that subject. But Christ explained it to them. Of course, they didn't particularly understand it. Now, I don't think every Friday afternoon Christ said to his disciples, or every Saturday morning, he said, let's go out in the field and eat. It happened to be a certain circumstance. And there's reason to do that. We can go back to the Old Testament in the book of Samuel, and I'll just refer to this briefly, where David was fleeing from Saul, and he goes to the priest and because he has his men with him, and they're hungry. And the priest gives David and his men the sacrificial bread to eat, which was, again, a little bit contrary to the rules and regulations. But it wasn't contrary to God's law, because the men were hungry. God made human beings to get hungry so that when they get hungry, their bodies get the nourishment they need. And I think in this day and age, most of us get more than we need. But nevertheless, the biblical example is there, that God's not out waiting for us to do some wrong thing, but he wants us to keep his Sabbath and wants us to enjoy it. How can we enjoy the Sabbath that's a burden? I remember a name brand minister that I worked with one time, that he likened the Sabbath being to an albatross around his neck, because he felt he could be much greater, he'd get more people to follow him if he didn't have to teach the Sabbath. What a shame. What a shame, because the Sabbath is to be a time that we stop our normal human activities, relax, and think about God, and to do it as much as possible as a family. And then if you have a church of converted people that you can attend, that's where you should, go for a short period of time. But most of our concepts of church attendance comes from modern-day Protestantism, not even Catholicism, but Protestantism. And, you know, that's a different subject. I've covered it quite a few times, but in the future I'll try to cover it in more detail. But let's go to Exodus 16, like I've been talking about, and here is the example. The Sabbath, or any day for that matter, but a Sabbath or a holy day, always it's a period of time between the two evenings, because you'd have a hard time on this earth finding any place hardly that the sun went down exactly the same place that it goes down 100 miles from there, because of the curvature of the earth. And you go from Florida to New York, and you'll find there is a difference in the time of sunset on the same day. If you've got hills, and so the Bible, and this is not my subject today, but there is the principle in the Bible of a day beginning between the two evenings, between, and in this case we use the term evening in the sense that we use it in this age, but also in the sense that it was previously used as being the end of one day and the beginning of the next day, because that's what happens at sundown every day. One day ends and the new day starts. Midnight is sort of a joke because it's illogical. It's illogical. It's like starting the year on January the 1st. It's illogical. And again, that's a subject for a different day. But God gave the children of Israel, while they were wandering in the wilderness, in fact, he fed them for 40 years on manna. That was what they called it. Was a bread-like substance, I guess. We don't know what it was, really, but it had a little sweet taste, the Bible tells us, and it fell. It fell 6 days a week. It didn't fall 7 days a week. Let's look in the 21st chapter. And they gathered it, every man according to his eating, and when the sun came up, wet and got hot, it melted and just disappeared. And that terminology, every man according to his eating. And it said, and it came to pass that on the sixth day, I'm in the 22nd verse, they gathered twice as much bread. And you know, the thing had been, the way it had been previously, that if they gathered more than according to every man's eating, more than their need, more than what their family needed, then it would stink and breed worms. But on the sixth day, they could gather it, keep it till the next day, till the Sabbath. And so this tells you a little of how you need to conduct yourself at moving from Friday into Saturday. Read verse 23. Of Exodus 16. And he said unto them, this is that which the Eternal hath said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Eternal. Bake that which you shall bake today, and sieve that which you'll sieve, and that which remains over lay up and keep till morning. Now, when you get to the do's and don'ts, I think this is very simple. It tells you, prepare on Friday what you need for Saturday. And verse 24, and they laid it up till the morning, and it did not stink, neither were there any worms. Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Eternal. Today you shall not find it in the fields. 6 days shall you gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there shall be none. And so God embeds these children of Israel's very emphatically that they got 6 days to work, but the seventh is the Sabbath. Now, I'll mention a lot of people that are Sabbath keepers keep Sunday too. Sunday is a work day. The command says 6 days shall you work, but the seventh is the Sabbath. And so, you know, that doesn't mean that you have to go out there and split rails, would be my grandparents' term, or some of the pioneers of this country's term, chop wood or whatever. But you may be retired. You might be able to work. You may have, but you have your housework. You have things to do that you do those 6 days and you don't do on the Sabbath. Bible tells us that we not to do our own pleasure on the Sabbath. Well, that doesn't mean it's wrong to watch television if it's the right kind of program. A lot of television is wrong to watch probably in the first place. But I like documentaries and history, and I'm speaking to you on the Sabbath right now, and I've watched some history programs in this 24-hour period, and I've learned some things. You know, it's not wrong to learn on the Sabbath. Sabbath is a good day to learn. It's a good day to meditate and think about things. It's a good day to study your Bible. It's a good day to sharpen your relationship maybe with your children and your family. And so the Sabbath is a blessing. It's not a curse. It's not an albatross around our necks. It is something that identifies us to the Creator God. It's something that if we will do it today, just like the children of Israel, God will make a covenant with us. And it will be our badge, our sign of identity, that it identifies us to the Creator God. And this has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.